Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. There's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard, and you're going to be glad you did, because we have Governor Pete DuPont with us right now. Governor Pete DuPont is former governor of the great state of Delaware, former member of the congressional delegation from there, former member of the House of Representatives, a candidate for president more than once, and as you've heard me say before, folks, I would be glad to live in a country that had a president, Pete DuPont, also a former chairman of the National Republican Committee, if I'm not mistaken. And many of you see him on television, his handsome face on television, and of course you've heard him on this show many times because he's our good friend. Governor DuPont, welcome back to the show.
My goodness, coming on this program just builds me up for the day. I get the best introductions I get anywhere. You're very kind.
I'll tell you, you earned all that. You deserved it. That's the soundtrack of your life, Governor. And I, as I've said before, and I like to say it again, you are a real patriot, and America is very fortunate to have had you as one of its leaders.
Well, you're very kind.
Well, it's the truth, and you continue to lead, and I just admire you so much for that, Governor. Let's get back to talking about let's talk about something that I alluded to as I went to the break a minute ago. I had a professor in college who, this is many, many, I can now say, unfortunately, Governor, I can now say many decades ago, I don't have to say many years ago, said to me, I was just an 18-year-old college freshman, he said to our class, there's not a nickel's worth of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Now, I grew up in a Democrat household, and that was blasphemy to me. I mean, for him to say that, I didn't understand any, I couldn't imagine that he could make an outrageous statement like that. I now know that he was telling the truth, that he was true, that he had more vision and wisdom at that age than I did. And now we know, Governor DuPont, beyond a shadow of a doubt, who the big spending party is. It's whichever one's in control.
Well, that seems to be exactly right. I mean, I can't believe what's going on in Washington. You know, they're spending and spending, and there's a little piece in the Wall Street Journal this morning on the editorial page about the amendment that went through to require earmarks when you're adding specific things to right. To bills. And it turns out there's half a dozen exceptions. You don't have to have an earmark.
Explain the earmark thing to folks, because they might not completely understand.
Well, you can vote in the Congress to spend $10 million on a social program or a defense program or an education program. But if your congressman wants to give $100,000 to one of the small towns in his district to help fix a museum or
build a tennis court or a bridge,
he can put that into the bill, and the problem has been that they're never identified. It's just in there that there's a bridge for such and such town and such state, but you don't know who the sponsor is. So they said, look, all these amendments, these special earmarks, are going to have to be labeled with the sponsor's name, and that's a good idea because that makes them more visible.
Sunlight, doesn't it?
But it turns out that there's a whole lot of exceptions now. And so that just says to me that they're pretending to reform things, but they're not doing very well.
Right. Well, and of course the Republicans are in charge, especially in the House. I mean, they're sort of in charge in the Senate, but they don't have a 60% majority. But still, what are we going to do? You know, the Democrats were in charge of Congress for 40 years, from the 50s to the 90s.
Right.
And of course, we know what kind of a big spending party they became. It makes you wonder, Governor, if 30 years from now, if the Republicans remain in power for 40 years, 30 years from now, if we might not see complete reversal of the roles of the Republicans and the Democrats.
Well, I'd like to think the Democrats one day might spend less. I'm not convinced of that, and we could devote a whole show to that some morning. But
the Republicans have plenty of help from the Democrats, don't they?
Oh, they really do. And, you know, when Newt Gingrich took over in the 1990s, he really, with the Republicans, took control of the House. They really began to clean things up. But the problem is they've been in power so long now that they've kind of become like the Democrats. And when it comes to spending, it's just awful. They've appropriated, while President Bush has been in office, the Congress has appropriated $350 billion more than the president has requested in his budget.
Hold on to that thought, Governor. When we come back, the Congress has a spending co-conspirator, one individual in Washington, D.C., that could change some of this, but he doesn't. He hasn't so far. And I'm going to get the governor to identify that spending co-conspirator when we come back after these messages. Point yourself, stay with us. Welcome back to 17 Tell. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend and a great American, ladies and gentlemen, Governor Pete DuPont. Governor DuPont, we've been talking about the big spending party in America, which is now the Republicans, only because they're in charge. But the bad news, you know, at least, Governor, when we had the Democrats in charge, at least the Republicans tried to be the anti-Democrats. They tried to be, you know, the non-spenders, and
right,
tried to hold things back. At least that's what they seem to have had some success in that area. But now that the Republicans are in charge, and they're the big spending party, it's like it is. It's just one big spending party.
And you know, part of you made a hint just before you went to the break there, and part of the problem's over in the White House.
That's the COVID.
You know, when you have a state legislature and a governor in charge, or when you have a federal Congress and a president in charge, the president or the governor has to be the leader. He has to say to the legislature, "Look, I want $1 million for this." And if the legislature comes back and has spent $1.5 million, you got to say, "No, guys, we can't do that. I'm going to veto that bill." And President Bush has not vetoed a bill.
Is that now a record, Governor?
It is, not quite. But he is the only president since John Quincy Adams. That was a while ago.
Almost 200 years.
1825 to 1829. John Quincy Adams was the last president who went a full term without vetoing a bill.
So he's approaching that ignominy, isn't he?
Oh, well, he's already passed his first term, of course.
Oh, the first term, right.
That was the first term.
And
the important thing is not the... the important thing is that the Congress gets that message, and they say, you know, the president, you know, we can add a little bit, and the president won't do anything about it. Well, as soon as you get that spending attitude in the Congress, it just kind of takes the lid off, Well, the president needs to assert some authority, but more important, somebody inside the Republican Party in the House of Representatives and in the Senate has to say, we're not going to do this anymore. And other than Jeff Flake of Arizona, there are not a lot of people arguing for that.
Well, Governor, not too many drug addicts wake up in the morning and say, "I'm going to stop doing this." There has to be some dramatic thing that happens to them, typically, that causes them to take a course of action to get cured. And
right,
I think they are ill. I think they do need a cure. And unfortunately for them, but maybe not for the United States, the electorate may cure them next fall. What do you think?
You know, it's hard to say what's going to happen next fall. Certainly, the Republican approval is way down. You look at the polling data, and my gosh, you see that 60-some percent of the people are disapproving the president and his handling of the economy. People say the Congress is not doing a good job until you ask them, of course, how's your congressman doing?
Right.
And then people tend to say, oh, he's doing just fine.
All politics is local, isn't it?
Politics is local, and of course he's getting money from Washington to bring back to his district, and so...
You know,
so he gets some credit, but you need some vision and some authority from the outside to say to a legislature, here are the boundary limits that we're going to adhere to.
Well, one of the things that troubles me, Governor, there's some unintended consequences or some collateral damage that's happening right now. I do believe that the president's tax cuts have helped tremendously to get this economy going. The evidence is in. It has increased significantly the revenue to the United States. I believe I'm a supply sider. I believe supply side economics works. It's working even as we speak. We're watching it work. But what bothers me is we don't have an income problem. We don't have a revenue problem in our government. We have a spending problem, and that's what's creating these deficits. And it bothers me that people are using the deficits to beat up on the tax cuts, and that's not what the problem is.
No, the problem of the tax cut has been enormously successful in growing the economy. Gosh, we've had the best economic growth we've had in a long while. Revenues pouring into the Congress, but the problem is we need some kind of spending control. And to tell you the truth, I think we're going to need a constitutional amendment that says that you got to have a supermajority vote in the House to spend more money. You got to have a three-quarters vote or a two-thirds vote or a 60% vote, whatever. Because unless you get some constitutional limitations on the Congress and the president, I'm not sure we're going to control spending.
I don't think you are. I mean, this is intervention. What you're talking about is intervention. Because they're not going to cure themselves. This is a drug. This money that they're spending is a drug. But, Governor, what bothers me is that so many of the mainstream media and others are using the deficit to try to act like the economy is not doing well, and those are two different things altogether, ladies and gentlemen. It just makes no sense to me. And what they're doing is... They're trying to make people believe that the economy, that the Bush economy is not a good one. And I'm telling you what, folks, the economy is just fine. The problem we got is government.
Well, the economy is fine, and the tax cuts and the economy have worked together and just made things ever so much better. But it's going to take some kind of a limitation, and of course, passing constitutional amendments is very difficult, but it's something that needs to be done.
Before there will be a constitutional amendment, the election will do something, whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. They'll do something that can make changes. Quick break, right back with Governor DuPont. We've got a lot more to come. He's got a lot more wisdom to impart upon us right after these messages. Stay with us. Back at 7 still. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. And I know you're happy that you did, because I know you're enjoying our visit with Governor Pete DuPont, former governor of the state of Delaware, former presidential candidate. I'm still upset that he didn't win, but that's another story. I'm still trying to get him to run again, but you remind me of Steve Forbes, Governor Steve's going to be, by the way, folks, Steve's going to be on this slot next Friday. Looking forward to getting him back on the show. But when I try to get Steve to run again, he says, I'm having more fun being an agitator.
Well, Steve ran a wonderful campaign, the idea of the flat tax.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, it just got the American people stirred up and thinking about it, and it hadn't been passed yet, and it's not easy to pass, but he had a good idea, and he ran on it, and I thought he did far better than anybody thought he was going to do.
He sure did, and he's still talking about that. He and I talk about that on the show, because I agree with the flat tax. I think the sales tax is a loser, and the flat tax is a good alternative, but not sales tax.
And the flat tax would save us billions of hours filling out the forms, complying with this and that. You just fill out a simple little form. You take your deduction for the children and your spouse. You subtract it from your income, and you pay 17%, 50%, whatever the law says, of the rest of it, and you send it in, and that's that. And, boy, that would our economy would be much better off because we'd have all that time to spend on useful things.
It sure would, and a whole lot less depression, too. Governor, I want the Pete DuPont prediction for what's going to happen in November in the election.
Oh, you see, coming on this show can be tough. We had a good few minutes here, didn't we? But now I got to come up with
something.
Put
the pressure on you, Governor. We need to know your wisdom.
Well, I would guess, first of all, that the Democrats will gain a Senate seat, at best two Senate seats, so nothing's going to really change over there. On the House side, you would think with all the public disgust and irritation with the Congress that the Republicans might lose the House. But when you look at the candidates in the various districts, I would say today that they might lose half of the majority they have, but would keep control. But there's a long time between now and election, and it could be that the Democrats are going to ride this all the way to victory.
What I think is going to happen to the Republicans, Governor, regardless of whether they lose anything or not, I think what's going to happen is if they lose anything, it won't be because people said, "I'm mad at you and I'm going to vote against you." It'll be because their base said, "You know what? I don't know you anymore. I don't know who you are. I don't recognize what you're doing. You don't stand for what I stand for. And since I'm a Republican, I'm not going to vote for the Democrat. But I tell you what, you just can't get me very excited about your candidacy, about what you're doing. I'm just going to stay home."
Well, that's exactly right, and I think the biggest risk is not that those Republicans will go out and vote for the Democrat, as you say. They'll just say, "The heck with it. I'm just not going to vote for any of them." And
because
that'll cost them.
Because anybody on the ballot that they're interested in.
Oh, yeah, and that'll cost the Republican Party. So they need to get some spending discipline in the Congress. The president needs to get some spending discipline, and they need to make it clear they're going to try to do something about this. And so far, they really haven't said anything.
You know, Governor, all this spending is one of the victims of 9/11. I've never heard anybody else say this, but I believe that this is the case. Prior to 9/11, we had an alleged surplus, and it was a surplus based on the wacky economy of the 90s. It was a real surplus apparently, and nobody wanted to spend. Nobody wanted to be the one to break through and spend that surplus and get us into a deficit spending. When 9/11 happened, we had to go into deficit spending to protect ourselves, to launch the war on terror, et cetera, et cetera. Once that veil was broken, all bets were off, and it's been willy-nilly ever since.
Well, I think most people would agree that going into deficit to keep the nation safe is a good idea. But when that idea transferred over to spending on kind of everything, you're right. Most voters for a while didn't focus. And one day they woke up and they said, "Hey, look at the size of the spending. Look at the deficits. Look at the lack of argument coming from the White House leadership that we ought to spend less." And it just got way out of control. And the thing that worries you now is you don't see hardly anyone in the Congress trying to, particularly within the Republican Party, trying to bring spending back under control. I mean, Jeff Flake and his 25 people are trying to make it happen, but you don't
Governor,
see them.
I've got to stop you. I'm sorry about that. Before we go, ncpa.org is your website, right? That's your chairman of the NCPA, National Center for Policy Analysis.
That's correct, and you can learn a lot going into there.
ncpa.org, ladies and gentlemen. Governor DuPont, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Well, glad to be with you.
See you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. Denver, I'm coming to see you Monday.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.